welcome to the Monsanto Wheat Media Call. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Lee Quarles of Monsanto Public Affairs. Thank you, Mr. Quarles. You may begin.
Thank you, Brenda, and good morning to everyone on the line. Thanks for joining us for this update call related to the USDA's reported detection of the original Roundup Ready wheat event. You may hear this technology referred to technically as the 71-800 event, but we'll discuss it generally as the CP4 event on today's call. I'm joined this morning by Rob Fraley, our Chief Technology Officer. Also joining us for the Q&A period are Phil Miller, the lead of our Global Regulatory Affairs Function, and Claire Kajakob, the senior lead of our Wheat Technology Platform. As Brenda noted, this call is being recorded, and we will post a copy of the recording and supporting slides on our website. The slides can now also be accessed directly through the link included on the invitation to this briefing. We've outlined the full agenda for this call on slide 2. We'll run through these points on this morning's call, and then we'll be happy to take your questions. Now, without further ado, let me turn the call over to Rob.
Hey, thanks, Lee, and good morning to everyone on the call. So as many of you know, last week, the USDA reported that it had detected our company's original Roundup Ready wheat event, or the CP4 event, which imparts tolerance to the herbicide glyphosate. And some reports indicate this is from a small area of a single field in the state of Oregon. As the leader of our technology organization, I want to assure you that no one is more interested in getting to the bottom of this than we are. This is why we're working around the clock and committing our full support and technical expertise to the USDA and the broader U.S. wheat industry. Before I get into the details, let me step back from a week of fast-moving information and set up our discussion today with how I think about these things in context. So first, everything we've seen to date suggests that this is a very isolated situation, and there's no evidence the CP4 event for wheat is present in commercial seed. We'll share some further testing with you in just a few minutes that reinforces that point. Second, I'm going to emphasize the testing is complex, and importantly, sophisticated methods are required to precisely identify the CP4 event. And third, the new information today is that we've completed a round of testing that demonstrates that the varieties used on the Oregon farm in particular, as well as a broad set of the wheat varieties commercially sold in this region, are clean of the event. That is, we cannot detect the CP4 gene in these varieties. So with that backdrop, let me begin by highlighting a quick overview of Monsanto's work in wheat research and our commercial business. And slide 3 provides a timeline of both our past and our current efforts in wheat. Let me focus on slide 4. So our original Roundup Ready wheat trait was field tested during the late 1990s and into the mid-2000s. We conducted trials in both spring and winter wheat varieties, which were all regulated by the USDA. This field research provides us with the information that we hoped would someday allow us to offer wheat farmers a novel way of managing weeds on their farm. The technology was designed to provide similar benefits, much like the advancements that we've made in numerous other Roundup Ready cropping systems that have been now planted around the world on billions of acres over the last decade. Throughout the duration of the wheat program, our company and cooperator field trials were done under stringent stewardship and regulatory requirements. And to just give you a sense of the rigor of the program, all aspects of the research, including the shipment, the storage, the isolation, the separation, and monitoring requirements, were all followed and audited by the USDA. We then submitted our regulatory package to the FDA, and the agency recognized the safety of our original Roundup Ready wheat technology for food and feed purposes in 2004. We made the difficult commercial decision to discontinue the program that very same year. And this was done through a series of actions, including ensuring that all seed from the cooperative field research programs were shipped to the USDA Crop Storage Center or were destroyed. All of these actions were verified. In addition, we conducted a rigorous monitoring program of all the fields where the research took place to track for any volunteer plants in the subsequent years that followed the actual trial. This monitoring program continued until no volunteer plants were present in the fields. And a bit of biology. We know that the average wheat seed stays viable for only 1 to 2 years in a harsh climate like Oregon. We also know that as a self-pollinating crop, wheat pollen remains viable for just a second, and 99% of wheat pollen travels less than 30 feet from its plant. And in the case of Oregon specifically, the company previously conducted field trials of Roundup Ready wheat in that state, and importantly, the last field trial conducted in Oregon was over 12 years ago. So now with this background and information in hand, let's turn to slide 5 and discuss the facts as we know them. And so first of all, we understand that this is an open and ongoing investigation. And we have not been provided a lot of details, including the actual testing methods or results, or plant samples from the USDA or from the Oregon State University or from the farmer. And that includes information that would allow us to understand, you know, the chain of custody of the plants in question and the exact type of testing methods that have been used. So we're learning some of this information at the same time that many of you on this call are reporting it. But here's what we do know. The USDA notified our business in early May that they received a single report stemming from a farmer in the state of Oregon. The farmer observed volunteers growing in an area that had been treated with glyphosate herbicide. This represented only about 1% of a 125-acre field on his Oregon farm. Reportedly, these volunteer plants were then sent to an Oregon State University researcher for testing, and some were reported to contain the CP4 glyphosate tolerance gene, which would be the same gene that's part of all the Roundup Ready crops. The researcher shared the results with the USDA, and the agency has conducted additional studies and told us of their conclusion that the MON 71800 event, the CP4 event, was present in volunteer wheat. And again, we don't know the testing methods that were used. We understand that the farmer planted a blend of two soft white winter wheat varieties, the USDA and Washington State public variety called ROD, and Westbred 528. And these were planted in the fall of 2011. We understand that he planted this same seed blend on at least two fields, and then he harvested the fields last summer, and then let the land lay fallow through this spring, which is the process that farmers use in that region. It's a common practice, and it's outlined on slide 6. We understand this spring, the farmer did his routine spraying with glyphosate to control weeds and wheat volunteers. And as I said, farmers in this region routinely use this practice to minimize tillage and help conserve valuable soil moisture. So when he did this, he had trouble controlling volunteer wheat plants on a small portion of one of the fields, even though both fields were planted to the same mixture. So I think this is a key observation, and it's a bit of a contradiction. So with this history, we began our own investigation to sort through the facts. And we've shared our latest findings on our website, and this can be seen on slide 7. In addition, we've provided a validated tested method, which can be used by the U.S. and other governments to precisely identify the MON71-800 event in wheat seed and grain. We've provided this precise testing method to the USDA, and we've also provided it to the governments of Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and the European Union at their request. Now, I'm sure you're hearing a lot about genetic testing in export markets, and it's not my intent to try to turn you all into molecular biologists, but let me just spend a minute or two and talk about how these tests work and why the gene-specific test is more reliable than the other testing methods that are commonly used today. If you move to slide 8, let me walk you through the different types of tests and how they're used. So let's start with the protein tests on the bottom of the slide. These are quick. Sometimes they're called dipstick tests, but they're not very specific. They can't distinguish whether the sample is contaminated by grain dust or seed fragments from other crops. And historically, their use in wheat has been pretty unreliable. The next type of tests are the CP4 gene tests based on PCR technology. And the most common of these are DNA PCR tests for the CP4 gene. However, I have to emphasize that most of these tests are not specific to the CP4 gene in wheat. They detect all CP4 genes in all the grains, in corn, in soybean, etc. And they're also subject to the same types of contamination issues that I've talked about. And you can imagine that, you know, grain being harvested in a combine in a farmer's field, transported on a truck, stored in a dusty elevator, or shipped in the hull of a boat, and then sent to a laboratory that may have tested thousands of other corn or soybean samples the day before, has an opportunity for lots of background contamination. So the point I'm making is the only unique PCR test is a CP4 event-based test, and this is shown on the slide. This test precisely for the CP4 event, MON71-800, in wheat specifically. And it's the only test that can distinguish between Roundup Ready in one crop or another. And this is the same test that we've provided to the USDA and other international regulatory bodies. And you can see this summarized best on slide 9, where we lay out how prevalent false positives are for those first two types of tests. And more importantly, you can see the event-specific test precisely and uniquely detects the CP4 event in wheat. Let me emphasize, this is the only reliable test, and we provided it to regulators, but we don't know if anyone else besides us is using it now. We've been using this test in a controlled environment lab with state-of-the-art equipment, and we've used it now to test dozens of varieties available to Oregon and Washington State wheat farmers and determine that all varieties are clean of this event in wheat. And this is a critical development. First, we tested the two varieties that the farmer reported planting, Rod and WB528. And today, I'm going to share those results with you on slide 10. So over the past week, we've collected and exhaustively tested a representative sample of foundation seed, or what we would describe as the parent seed, for these two varieties. And we've confirmed that these samples show no detectable presence of the CP4 event. This means the CP4 event is unlikely to be found in the seed stock for the two varieties the farmer used. And these results are also consistent with the farmer's own observations that he planted at least two fields with the same seed mixture and only observed glyphosate-tolerant volunteers in one field. Had the original mixture been contaminated, We would have expected to see such volunteers in all fields planted by the farmer. And frankly, we would have probably seen it for many, many years over the last decade. In addition, we've now completed validated tests on a broader set of wheat seed varieties that were available to wheat farmers throughout Oregon and Washington State region. On slide 11, we outlined our findings of those tests on the foundation seed for 50 additional varieties, which collectively represent approximately 60% of all the acres of soft white winter spring wheat seed varieties grown in this bi-state region for 2011. And these results, using the precise testing method for the CP4 event in wheat, are also clean. That is, we cannot detect the CP4 event in these samples. We'll continue testing varieties and share this information with the USDA and the wheat industry as they track the actual source of the CP4 event in this one Oregon field. These results are important, as they clearly indicate that the CP4 event is not present in the representative commercial varieties used across these two wheat-growing states. And I think this information, combined with that shared by the USDA already, point to this as a localized finding and one unlikely related to the planting of these commercial varieties. These testing results would also be consistent with the observation of agronomists, our own salespeople, and farmers across the bi-state area that routinely use glyphosate to control volunteer wheat in their fallow fields. There is no indication of unusual reports over the last 10 years of wheat volunteers surviving glyphosate application. So now, let's step back for the next few minutes and discuss all the data and the results to date. And these are on slide 12. Here are the three key points that I think about. First, we've looked at the field trial program. We did a thorough job of closing down the program. We did extensive monitoring and auditing of the program in subsequent years. We understand the farmer didn't plant a research trial. We also know that we can rule out basic environmental factors, that neither a leftover seed or pollen from a trial could rationally explain the current situation at this time. Second, we looked at the farming practices. Glyphosate has been effective in controlling volunteer wheat in this region for the last decade. And finally, we looked at the seed. Our analysis of the two varieties that the farmer planted, as well as the analysis of the broader seed stock, demonstrates that the CP4 event in wheat is not widespread and continues to be limited to this single field in question. So what's going on? This is an important question and one that we remain committed to working with the USDA and the wheat industry to understand. And I would ask if anyone has further information on this investigation, we would encourage you to share it. We believe that when we receive DNA samples from the USDA, from the Oregon State University, or from the farmer, that we'll be able to fingerprint the exact wheat variety that is being implicated here. And I need to make an important point. The current fact pattern is not consistent with the widespread presence of the CP4 event in commercial wheat varieties. Instead, it seems likely to be a random, isolated occurrence more consistent with the accidental or purposeful mixing of a small amount of seed during the planting, harvesting, or during the fallow cycle in an individual field. Now, we understand there's a lot of interest in this ongoing investigation, and we'll continue to share information. So turning to slide 13, I'm going to conclude with the following points. First, sophisticated testing is required, and we've shared that. Second, our tests demonstrate that the varieties in question and other commercial seeds are clean of the event. And lastly, all the data and observations to date suggest this is a very isolated situation, and there's no evidence that the CP4 event is present in commercial wheat. And the USDA confirmed the same point yesterday. We are pleased that the USDA and the FDA have highlighted that this incident poses no safety concerns. And as such, I encourage everyone that the response, as it relates to testing specifically, and in general to wheat production, grain shipments, and international trade, needs to be proportional to the absence of exposure and the confirmed safety of the CP4 trait. So with that, thank you. Let me hand it back to Lee, and we'll take some of your questions.
Thank you, Rob. Brenda, we would like to now open the line for questions. I would ask that we have a number of guests on the line today, so I would ask that you respect each other's time, and please ask one question when you enter the queue. If you have additional questions, I would encourage you just to re-enter the queue, and we'll do our best to get through all the questions this morning. So, Brenda?
Thank
you. Let's open the line for questions.
Thank you. We will now be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may also press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Once again, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad if you have a question at this time.
Brenda?
Yes, sir.
I would ask that people just identify their name and the outlet that they're also from.
Okay, sir. I'll be announcing that for you as well. Our first question comes from the line of Alan Berger with Bloomberg News. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. So do you know yet where the farmer got the seed?
Thanks for your question. We do not know that. We've been in the reports, have read the varieties of the seed, and those are Rod and Westbred 528. So that's what we know regarding the samples of wheat. Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Elton Robinson with Delta Farm Press. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
We hear you great. Can you still hear us fine?
Okay. It still seems as though, from what I've heard this morning, is that we're not quite ready to confirm that it was the Monsanto event that is in these samples. And I'm wondering, I'm assuming that you really can't confirm that until you perform this more specific test. And are you expecting to receive samples from USDA, from the actual site, to so that you can perform that test, or would you give that test to USDA so that they could perform it themselves? Could you kind of just explain what the procedure is and maybe what the timetable is for doing this further testing?
Sure, Alden, and that was a big question, and I think it's an important one because it illustrates, this is complicated and requires a lot of testing and a lot of data. So the USDA reported that it was the Monsanto CP4 event, and we absolutely presume that's the result, and we've acted, as a company based on the importance of understanding what's going on and using our testing capability to understand the wheat market and the industry. I think where a lot of the confusion comes from is that we presume that it's that event. We do not know the particular wheat variety, and that's where getting the samples of the plants or seeds from from the researchers from the farmer for the USDA would help us identify the exact wheat variety that could be involved here. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Matus Berkowski with Capital Press. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, I was wondering, you know, what are the potential scenarios? You mentioned that, you know, in your view, the only real possibility is if there is some accidental or purposeful mixing of seed as opposed to gene flow or anything else. So in what way could this possibly happen?
Thanks for the question. And, you know, I think it's important, you know, we're not ruling anything out at this point. We're trying to be very science and data driven. You know, I think the data that we've reported, you know, is you know, I would explain it as, you know, we've tested now almost 60% of the parental seed lines for this region, and we haven't seen a detection. We know that the circumstances are highly unusual, that the farmer, you know, purchased this blended seed, planted it on multiple fields, and only one field generated the volunteers, and this occurred, you know, after these research trials and programs had been closed down for you know, nearly a decade. So it is unusual. We can't rule anything out, and we're going to continue to do the research until we get to the answer. I know, Phil, you've been thinking about this a lot. Any comments you'd share to add?
No, I would just say, you know, again, the fact that we're operating off the information that the USDA provided us, that this is MON 71800. And I think the other piece that I would emphasize is the fact that, you know, we've taken action quickly. We've looked at these varieties, and we've done it in an extremely technical, sound way using the event-specific assay.
Brendan, next question.
Our next question comes from the line of Nigel Dwyer with Associated Press. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I'm wondering what the process was for destroying those seeds, and if anyone still has, you know, copies of them or samples of them somewhere that you all know about, and if you don't, kind of how you know they don't have them.
Sure, and I'm going to have Claire answer that question. She's the lead of our wheat program. As I said, you know, we terminated those programs in many cases over nearly a decade ago, and we observed all the guidelines for seed collection or destruction. Claire, why don't you provide a little bit more detail?
Yes, when we shut down the program, you know, nearly a decade ago, we had all the cooperators who we were doing research with either destroy their samples, or we had them shipped and stored at the USDA seed storage facility in Colorado. And then we followed up with each of those cooperators and confirmed that they had done one of those two practices.
Thanks for the question.
Brenda, next question.
Our next question comes from the line of Jack Keskey with Bloomberg News. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Rob. Wanted to ask you about, sorry for the delay, everybody. Multitasking. I wanted to ask you about, you mentioned the possibility of accidental release or a purposeful act of mixing. What exactly does it mean, mixing, and can you talk more about that?
Yeah, so, you know, as I said in the call, we're trying to work through this on a science basis. We're working through it systematically and letting the data give us the answer. And if you kind of go back to the key points that I highlighted, you know, if it were contamination of one of the key seed stocks in this region, you know, we've already assayed the seed stocks for 60% of the varieties and have not detected the event. Farmers in this region practice the use of fallow treatment with Roundup to control their weeds and their volunteer wheat. If there were situations where there was unusual or difficult to control fields of wheat, we would have, you know, as the manufacturer of Roundup, we would have certainly heard about it. So both the DNA testing and the field and agronomic observations
are not consistent with that type of presence. And,
are you suggesting that it's like an act of sabotage of some sort when you say purposeful act?
No, we don't know yet. All we can tell you is that it's isolated, and it could have been either accidental or purposeful. We're certainly not implying the farmer at all in this. There's lots of operations and steps in between the production of seed and farming operations that are possible. Phil, I know you've thought about this and wrestled with this. You might want to share some of your thinking.
No, you know, I think, as Rob said, we're a science-based company. We're trying to get to the bottom of this, and we're just trying to follow through and be data-driven. So we're open to every scenario, and I think two things. The first action that we've taken is to provide confidence to our farmers and our key import markets that, in fact, the presence of this event is not pervasive. That was our first and most important action. I think the second thing is, again, I won't go back through the fact patterns that Rob did, but as we're sampling and understanding this and approaching it with the science, we're doing it in a way that considers every scenario and trying to get to, you know, where might have this come from.
Sorry, Phil. I think, you know, Jack, the important thing to conclude from this, if it's not systemic, then it's point source and isolated, and that really really helps us focus on what our next step should be, and that it's not widespread.
Gotcha.
And Jack, I would also just add, you know, we would expect USDA, as it's open and ongoing investigation, that they would also be considering all these different variables as well. Brenda, can we take the next question?
Certainly. Our next question comes from the line of Carrie Gillum with Reuters. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah. Hi, guys. I do want to ask you about the testing, but first I just want to clarify, are you saying it is possible it is sabotage, or are you not going to that length?
We're considering all options at this point, and that's certainly one of the options that we're looking at.
Okay. My question is about the testing. Are you providing the this event-specific test, are you providing an actual test to the governments, to USDA, to others? Are you providing the methodology for them to create their own tests? And are you providing them, or do they already have positive samples so that they can, you know, ascertain that the tests work and give you valid positives as well? How can you explain a bit more about how
that I'm gonna slide that one right over to Phil Miller, because that's what he's been doing for the last several weeks.
So that's a good question for clarification. We have designed and validated a robust event-specific methodology. That methodology has been provided to the USDA as well as to other international regulators in Japan, Korea, Taiwan. And that is a method. We also, in that process, have provided them with positive controlled DNA, to be specific to your question on that one. And again, they will take those methods in their labs, which are set up to do these types of methods, and implement them and validate them themselves on top of the validation that we provided. I think the one other thing that's really critical to understand here is this work has been done in our laboratories, and our laboratories are ISO 17025 certified. You know, this is the highest certification that any analytical lab can receive in the world. And as you're aware, these labs also undergo proficiency certification from groups like GIPSA, which is part of our U.S. government, as well as ISTA.
So, Carrie, I think the punchline is we've now provided these tests. We don't know yet whether the governments are in use, but we've shared them, and we're certainly support that. I think the last thing, you know, I talked an awful lot about the false positives and contamination. You know, that is a real challenge with the sophistication and precision of these PCR tests. I mean, you know, these tests are capable of picking up a single gene or the DNA of a single cell, which means you have to be extreme in terms of avoiding contamination from aerosols, from the atmosphere, We set up our laboratory under carefully controlled environmental conditions with HEPA filters. We utilize brand new equipment for sample grinding and preparation and testing to avoid the false positives that can come literally from a grain of dust.
Brenda, we'll take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Greg Horsemeyer with the DTN. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the APHIS situation. We've only had a couple of times where we've faced something like this, where something's got into the environment before it's been approved. So I'm assuming that part of the answer is there's not a lot of practice in this. But do you think it's unusual that you, as of this date, still don't know the details of the testing procedures that APHIS is using, and you really haven't had access to any of the plant material or any of the DNA material that they've been using in their tests?
Well, I guess I'd start out by saying this is an active investigation, and we certainly respect and recognize the USDA's responsibility to do this. I mean, we are committing, as I said in my remarks, we're working night and day to get the testing capabilities built up, and our primary focus and goal in this whole thing is to minimize any disruption to the farmer or to the wheat industry or to international markets. And, we are going to provide our full cooperation both to the USDA and to the wheat industry.
Brenda, we'll take the next question.
Certainly. Our next question comes from the line of Jennifer Latsky with High Plains Journal. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Yes. My question is, can Monsanto, can you guys account, and I know we've gone over this, of the process of quitting those testing protocols, but can you account for any seeds or germplasm that you have in inventory for future research that might have came out of that program? Can you account for the people that have access to those seeds, either at the USDA or through Monsanto? Has that line of inquiry been looked at in the company?
I mean, that's a very good question. That's been part of, we've gone back and re-looked at the program and protocols we used for the shutdown of that program. And I'll just, ask Claire to maybe provide a little bit more detail than she did in just in terms of how thorough that is and what the audit trail is and those results.
Yeah, when we shut down the program, all of the seed samples, like I had mentioned before, were sent to and stored at the USDA seed storage facility in Colorado. Materials that we have, and we do this routinely in all our efforts, is we store some seed here in our deep storage. And so we do have some materials that we've been able to test. But we've been very careful in how seed is stored, and keep track of where it's located and how it's stored.
Brenda, we'll take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ian Berry with Wall Street Journal. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to follow up on Greg's question. Are you surprised at this point that you haven't received any samples of this material? I mean, it's been a month since you were first notified. And what has USDA and Oregon State said in response to presumably your request to receive that?
We've made requests now to the USDA. We've made requests to the Oregon State researcher. We have not been in direct contact with the farmer. We have been in contact with the farmer's lawyer, and we've requested samples from all of those parties. In terms, we also recognize that the USDA has investigatory responsibility here. And Phil, I think you're probably the best person to talk through that.
Yeah, so a couple of things from the day that the USDA received this notification and started its investigation, we've been cooperating with them and communicating with them, and they have, requested various materials from us, and we've provided those. I feel like we have an open dialogue with the USDA, and I'll just go back to that they do have a responsibility to investigate this, and there is limitations to the data they've been able to share with us to date, and we respect that. But to Rob's point, we have made the request.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, with the capabilities we have, we could help, and I think we could bring additional clarity to this situation. So, you know, we would like very much to be able to analyze those samples.
Brenda, we'll take the next question.